It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We've got a great panel, Renee Ritchie in-house, along with Jason Snell and, of course, Andy Iannocco. We're going to talk about all the latest rumors, including a 12-inch Retina MacBook Air. Stay tuned. It's time to talk Macs. Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 395, recorded March 25th, 2014. 2 + yellow = sandwich. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at Gazelle.com. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers your Macintosh world. And Mac World is on this week, so we've got a great big studio audience. Nice to have you all today. Macworld starts tomorrow. Renee Ritchie's in town for Montreal for Macworld, I presume.
I came for the weather, Leo. Macworld is just a great side benefit.
You know, it started raining. It got cold the minute you got here. I don't understand.
This is like summer for me. This is fantastic.
Is it? Okay.
Absolutely.
You're okay?
Yes.
All right. It's very strangely unseasonal weather.
I brought
Jason Snell is here. He's here. He's just down the road a bit, so...
I came all the way from 30 minutes away. Oh, no.
We're thrilled to have you.
Always, it's so rainy up here.
Always nice to have you in the studio. And in Boston, Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Andy, do you miss coming out to Macworld Expo? They used to do it in Boston, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, ever since I was a teenager, like 1985. And so just taking like two buses and commuter rail and what to get there. And then seeing, I was at every Macworld Expo from like 1990 onward. And yeah, I miss it. It's a great scene. I have to be a little bit pickier about how I spend 4 or 5 days and flying 3,000 miles these days. But yeah, I do miss it. At some point, someone should like, yeah.
I don't want to be negative about Macworld, but somebody here has to just point out that since Apple left, it has shrunk, and everybody says, but it's about the community.
More like it's changed. I don't want to send the message that it's no longer worth my time. It's more like usually when I commit to, like, again, 3,000 miles, it's because I'm going to get a whole bunch of news stuff that I can write lots of columns about.
Right.
And so now it's no longer the sort of thing where someone like me goes there to get lots of news stories. But it is the times where I went. I think the last one I went to was a year ago or 2 years ago. It's just a nice little festival for people who are interested in Macs, interested in Apple, and interested in the stuff that people who use Macs and iPhones and iPads do.
Apple is in no way at Macworld.
No.
Not even like people walking around.
Apple employees will go, but it's not official in any official capacity. I should disclaim, IDG, the company that owns my company, also owns the company that produces Macworld. We're not the same company. I don't actually have any real control other than the power of persuasion or
like
what they do.
You're like kissing cousins.
We're like cousins. Yeah. We're kissing, we'll see. We're hugging cousins. But, you know,
and Paul Kent still puts some great show together.
And his challenge, I mean, first off, the trade show business isn't very good. And second, then Apple leaves. And their challenge has been, how do we turn this into something different? And they are trying to turn it into, like Andy said, it's more of a festival. It's more of a fan event. It's more like a comic convention or a film festival or something like that. And I think they're doing a good job at turning it into that. But it's tough because it's a very different business than the business of having a bunch of software companies pay you a lot of money for space on a trade show floor.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. And you know, it isn't just Macworld. It's everything. You know, the New Media Expo this year had a keynote by a hypnotist because he was willing to pay enough money to become a gold or a platinum sponsor. And then tried to sell $1,000 books, and it really, to me, it was that when you see, and I'm sure you'll see it in Macworld, the massage chairs and real estate sales and stuff. You realize it's tough to get the economics to work.
Well, unless you've got if you're a high-end conference that people will spend several hundred dollars to get access. And there is actually a high-end IT conference that happens, I think, tomorrow in advance of the show. And then there is a conference pass that's got lots of content. Right. So that's a business that's going on. If you just wander in and look at the trade show floor, yeah, it's nothing like what it was. They're trying to make it not be about the trade show floor.
Yeah, especially but it's tough. It's a double whammy as well because Apple moved to their own events. They think they're big enough now that they can run their own events. But at the same time, you have shows like CES, which have Apple and iPhones just became so popular that everybody wants a piece of it now.
Yeah.
So you'll go to shows that have nothing to do with Apple traditionally, and they have monstrous amounts of cases and gadgets and what have you.
You also said that because as they've moved Macworld later, now this is as late as it's ever been in March. It comes up closer and closer to WWDC, and so now it is even less important from the point of view of news. And
well, there was never much non-Apple news at WWDC. Right. This is really about getting, I think, part of it is the trade show logistics. I know from talking to Paul Kent that, you know, trade shows reserve conference space years in advance, so it's actually very hard to move the dates. And the date that they had last year that they said that they were going to do the show was like Super Bowl Sunday or something. It was a terrible day. And so they got this date, but they wanted to move away from CES because it was a big problem. The press didn't want to come. The exhibitors didn't want to come a week after CES. Right. So now it's at least got some distance from CES, and we'll see, you know, we'll see how this time works for them.
Yeah, I've become less interested in trade shows. Man, you get so much of this information online. I do love the community.
Conferences and meeting people for the interesting content and interesting speakers are much more. I mean, I see Renee in Montreal every year now because there's a great Mac developer conference in Montreal that Guy English and company put on called Singleton with a little thing down at the bottom of the sea.
Yeah.
It's very, very French. And I love those conferences, and I'm going to one in Ireland in a few months. But those are not trade shows, and the economics are really different.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are a bunch of those developer conferences, aren't there? And I'm just like Jason. It's like most of my when I fly to speak now, it used to be mostly conferences like a Macworld. Now it's these smaller like 2-day events that are developer conferences or consultant conferences because there seems to be a good model for that because more and more keep popping up every day, and some of them are being done just exquisitely. Like the conference that I think Jason was talking about is just one of the finest conferences I've ever spoken at, and it's like they invited me back. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it this year, but now it's like next year's like, let's put aside some time and some money to come back to Ireland because that was a really good time.
Andy Bayo does XOXO Fest in Portland.
That's a great
fantastic
one. But these are much smaller.
And oftentimes they're a labor of love, and they're not. I mean, IDG is running this to make a profit, and that's a really tough business. A lot of these things are sort of break-even propositions for their organizers.
Yeah, Jason, you kind of put it on the head when you're comparing things to, like, Comic-Cons, because it's pretty much the exact same model where people of a certain part of the country or of the world who feel as though, gee, there's not a good conference in our part of the country, let's go put one on ourselves and we can put our own stamp on it and our own signature on it. And they're hoping to break even. It's just not a money-making venture. And that's what gives them the freedom to put on these really quirky special events that take only about a year or two to develop their own personalities and quickly become legend from something you've never heard of to, gee, who do I have to butter up to get an invite to go to XOXO? Because that's every video that was coming out of that conference was like, wow, I'm going to set aside the rest of the day to watch this.
The one thing that's really nice about Macworld still is though CES is not a consumer show. It's a consumer electronics show, but it's analysts and buyers and media. Macworld is meant for the community. So you can go there and talk to the developers who make the apps and the people who make the peripherals and everything like that and get that one-to-one contact, air your grievances or give your admiration. And also with the absence of Apple, I remember covering Macworld years ago, people would fly in for the keynote, watch Steve Jobs or Phil Schiller, and then fly out.
Well, they'd go to the show floor, walk through the Apple booth, which was really just like an Apple store, and leave.
Right.
It used to be like I was somebody that everybody, all my friends knew that, oh, this person, Andy knows someone who is in Coldplay. He can totally hook you up with tickets if you need them. I'm sure that pretty much everyone on this panel like would be starting getting those emails like three weeks in advance saying, is there any way that I can get an invite into the keynote for Macworld? Do you know anybody? Can you get any pull? But this was another area in which Apple sort of led the way for other companies, where it used to be that a company felt as though they needed to debut a new product or announce a new strategy at a larger conference or at a larger trade show, maybe because there are just so many of those other trade shows out there. Now well, how much does it cost to rent a ballroom in New York City? Not very much. So let's launch our new phone in New York City at an event that we can, so we can choose the timing so that we can control the news cycle that day. And so that's another reason why these huge mega events aren't as important to so many people as they once were.
The real challenge is to get a free calendar date for your mega event, because everybody's doing, in fact, as we are doing this show, HTC is unveiling its new HTC One Mark II, the M8, next door. Literally next door. So, and you can watch that. This is a Mac show, so we're not going to spend any time on it. I played with it a little bit, and it's beautiful.
That's the unpredictability of it now. And
when is it going to be? You never know.
Well, like last year, CES, we had a ton of stuff. And Mobile World Congress, we had almost nothing. And this year, CES, it wasn't very much. And Mobile World Congress was jam-packed.
Huge.
And it's hard to tell now what's going to be where or when.
I think announcing at the big trade shows is actually a huge mistake for most people, because unless you are so big that you can take advantage of having all the media there and they'll swarm to cover you. But even then, the media then will move on to the other 8,000 things they've got. There are always people who, back in the Apple keynote days, would release their press release of their new product announcement the morning of the Apple keynote. And it was the dumbest thing in the world, because nobody was ever going to talk about that product. They were going to talk about whatever Apple talked
about.
That's
when you release your poor earnings for the past quarter, not your new product.
So HTC or Samsung or Apple, who led the way here, doing their own events, it's so smart, because if you've got enough weight to get the journalist to fly to wherever you're doing the event, it's a way better, because that's all they're going to be talking about.
Yeah. We do have an event coming up Thursday. Microsoft's going to do an event in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And we think that Microsoft's going to announce, it'll be the first public event their new CEO, Satya Nadella, has led. And we think they're going to announce Microsoft Office for the iPad, long awaited.
Absolutely. And it's a week before Build, which is odd in its timing, because they have their big show in San Francisco a week after they're doing this show in San Francisco.
Well, they got Satya down there. They'll just keep him there for a few extra days. It's a pain for journalists, though. You know, Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley are not coming out for Thursday's announcement, because they'd have to stick around for another week for Build, which they are coming out for. It's tough.
Look at all the Macworld Expo people.
Are you excited about Office, as long as I mention it, Office for iOS?
There was a time.
I would have been more excited last year. Yeah.
Better late than never. Or just
the problem, you can't wait too long, can't you?
Yeah, because, I mean, Microsoft has given us all about 3 years to figure out alternatives to Microsoft Office. And that's given us time to realize that we don't need the desktop version of Office. We need something that's relevant for mobile use, which means that we're willing to accept fewer features for better interface design, like what we get in Pages. But the other side of it is that you have to realize that the Office user isn't someone who particularly cares about a better interface. All they care about is that, can I get the work that I'm supposed to be getting done on this device instead of this other device? So on that basis, if it integrates with the world that they have to work with inside the Office, where they don't have to care about anything, they don't have to sync anything, they don't have to install anything, they don't have to update anything, just miraculously this nice slim device will do everything they have to do in Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, and Outlook, then that's just automatically a win for them. So it's not necessarily the same market for Office users as it is for a Pages user or even a Google Docs user.
Yeah. And it's so tough for Microsoft. For example, they licensed Exchange to Apple and Google, and that was great for the Exchange team, but it really hurt Windows Mobile and then Windows Phone. And Office, you're thinking, is that the crown jewel that'll help promote Surface sales, or is that something they want to get on the iPad so that Office sales blow up?
I'm increasingly of the opinion they just didn't have it in time, and they weren't ready, and they shipped it as soon as they can. They seem to be doing joint development between that and what they call Project Gemini, which is a touch-forward version of Office for their own platform, for Windows, particularly for Surface.
By 2014.
Yeah, and if they're trying to do those two together, then that could explain why it
took
so long.
How do you wait so long? You're Microsoft. You're one of the smartest, best engineering companies in the world, and it takes you 7 years to get a touch-optimized version.
I am sure that if they wanted to, they could have had it done fast. Absolutely. But it wasn't a priority, because it was the other guy's platform. I think the Surface didn't ship with it. Well, that's true. Did they rush the Surface out? I think Microsoft in the latter years of Steve Ballmer was trying a lot of things and was changing tack, every few months. And
Wally
that's why,
Coyote.
You've
had OneNote for a while. Now OneNote on the Mac. Is that everybody going to stand up and cheer now?
OneNote is a good example, though. I mean, I think that what I would have said a minute ago is that the Microsoft that was structured 10 years ago would have definitely rushed out an iOS version of Office immediately, because they were like 12 different fiefdoms that could are each competing with each other for Microsoft's attention and resources. Whereas Microsoft now tries to be a little bit more cohesive in the image that they try to project and create a suite of apps that is designed to work together. They're trying not to be too Game of Thrones about it in terms of their corporate structure. And when you look at what OneNote was like, that was the first app that they really rethought for for a multi-touch interface. And it was as far removed from the desktop version as possible. They came up with some really interesting interface design and some new interface elements that took really nice advantage of it and really made me interested in what they would be doing for Microsoft Office. But as we said, it's irrelevant at this point. I mean, we're expecting something that is so good at this point that will make us, again, have to link right back to the tools that we're using on the desktop and not even care about alternatives that now have 3 years worth of integrity on iOS. And I'm not sure if that's a doable thing at this point.
Now, replace the words Microsoft Office for the iPad with the iWatch. Is as an analyst says, time ticking for Apple to announce an iWatch?
Time is always ticking.
Trip Chowdhury of Global Equities Research says, Apple has 60 days left to either come up with something or they will disappear. I love John Gruber's take on this. John quotes the Katie Thompson article on CNBC. Chowdhury says it will take years for Apple's $130 billion in cash to vanish, but it will become an irrelevant company, .. It will become a zombie if they don't come up with an iWatch. This is, again, managing director at Global Equities Research. And Gruber says, I'm guessing the .. denotes when he paused for another line of Coke.
Yeah.
Ooh, ow!
How do they keep their jobs?
Ow! So I gather the Apple community doesn't agree that time is ticking.
People say this all the time about everything Apple does, and 60 days left. I mean, that's one of the dumber things. People say lots of questionable things
days
about Apple.
Is
that
short.
Is so stupid that it defies understanding.
Raise the dumbness level.
That is like almost in Rob Enderle territory there. Maybe not that much, but it's kind of crazy. I mean, Apple releases things on its own timelines, and we're all really impatient. And there's so much in the press and in analysts that comes out of boredom, out of impatience. We want the next cool thing to write about or talk about. And in fact, most of these groundbreaking products that Apple has done over the last 10 years have been things that came in what you would call late.
Yes.
But they were the right product at the right time. And, maybe they'll be too late with this or not. But I look at the current amount of available smartwatches and other wearables out there, and they're not hemorrhaging customers to other people right now. It is a non-existent market. A lot of big ideas and some weird products like
things,
this. Maybe, but it's not a real product yet, right?
Right.
And Apple tends not to do those proof of concept announcement, and then a year later, you see a real product.
Here are the renderings.
Yeah, exactly. So
which isn't necessarily the right way to do things. But yeah, I mean, Apple usually waits for someone else to establish a market so they can take a look at how actual users are actually reacting to these things. They also buy them themselves to point at laugh at certain things and take copious notes on a few other things about it. And yeah, it's going to be late this year, next year, maybe even next year when this thing comes out. But I mean, it's clear to see, though, that Tim Cook something is stressing him out, because you see the same sort of Obama thing going on with him, where when he took over as CEO, he had this rich head of black hair, and now you see it go white over the course of the iWatch development. So maybe we're just wrong about this.
I would be the opposite. If Apple put out an iWatch before it was ready, I would start to get nervous about Apple.
That's what Apple is doing. Apple needs to get it right, as opposed to get it first or get it early.
Like the iPhone, there were Trios and Blackberries and Windows Mobiles for years before the iPhone. There was tablet PCs for a decade before there was the iPad. Apple does not, they don't move first. They liked exactly what Andy said. They want to see what's wrong with the products already in the market and then see if Apple can make a compelling solution. And if they can't, they won't go there. And if they can, they produce their version of the product.
Dave Morin, who is a former Facebook guy who created Path, which is a beautiful app, first on iOS and now on Android, wrote an interesting article on Medium, came out, I think, today or yesterday, in which it's called Super Normal. He says, innovation starts with the ordinary. He talks about the key, and I think Apple's right in here, to creating a great something is to take the normal and then add a twist that makes it an innovation. And he talks about the Mac was a personal computer with a GUI. The iPad was an MP3 player with a, or I'm sorry, iPod was an MP3 player with a click wheel interface. The iPhone was a smartphone with multi-touch. Yeah. It's those little things that they did to already existing product categories that created the innovation.
They made, their innovation is mainstreaming technology to make it accessible to a much larger market than it traditionally has been.
He says, by removing friction for the user to interact in a new way, each of these products unlocked massive value. I think that's what Apple's trying to do, right?
That's that's true. It's more like I think not everybody. You don't have to go in and if you're not in the business of simply selling in volume, you don't have to dive in to just jump into any market that seems to have presented itself. Just because someone else is making a lot of money on netbooks doesn't mean that you have to start making netbooks too. I've used that example so many times that I don't even have to go into that again. But there should be some comment in this conversation that Trios were wonderful and Blackberries were wonderful. And if both of those companies had held off on, no, the keyboards are on the way out, these tactile interfaces are on the way out, we're not going to create this market until this thing is absolutely perfect and as mind-blowingly different from what the phones people have today as possible, we wouldn't have had 5 years of these wonderful devices. We also wouldn't have had that information infrastructure that made the iPhone possible. So I think that Apple definitely does things exactly the right way for them because they are telling a story with every product that they do, and they want to make sure they're telling their story correctly. Nonetheless, let's not turn this into denigrating BlackBerry and Palm for doing things early with a successful product that people love. It's just a Sometimes you're doing market research for whoever comes next to you.
Right, I don't think we're denigrating them so much as pointing out that Apple isn't usually in that place. I mean, one of the times Apple was in that place was with the Newton, and look how that went. Right. And I love my Pebble, but my Pebble feels to me very much like my Trio or my Palm 3 did back in the day, which is, well, this is really cool that this can even work, but this is not how it's going to be.
It's the early adopter
It's a Tesla-like device where the people who are buying Tesla cars are people who are optimized to like that kind of car and are open to different and new things. They're willing to accept that they have a 230 or 240 mile range instead of 400 mile range. The people who are actual legitimate Pebble owners right now are people for whom they've always imagined that a smartwatch on your wrist is exactly the way to do things. They're willing to suffer a little bit if it's not quite perfectly done, if the charging time isn't what they'd like it to be, if it's not as slim as what they'd like it to be, and if the tools aren't what they'd like it to be, because this is something they've been wanting for a long time. I think that things like Google Glass is also a Tesla-like product. And I think that Google Wear is also a very Tesla-like product where Apple doesn't want to build a Tesla. They want to build a Toyota.
I don't even think Google Glass is that far along yet. I think Google Glass is in its own
way off.
It's you know, proof of concept more than anything else.
I mean, in the sense that unless you're a journalist, you're not buying $1,500 Google Glass unless this is something that I've always felt as though this is the way to go. And this is something that even if it's a little bit painful, the alternative is nothing like this. So I'm going to go with this.
Yeah,
that's what.
And as long as we're debunking false stories, Eddie Q never threw a pen. I mean, Steve Jobs never threw a pen at Eddie Q.
It was an extended keyboard. Get your story right.
Yeah.
Did he throw Eddie Q at a pen, or did he throw a pen at Eddie Q? I'm not sure.
I've heard through the grapevine that Phil Schiller has never owned a Lamborghini either.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he was a Porsche man.
Apparently, a lot of the anecdotes in Haunted Empires are mistaken. I don't know. At least they're denied. Eddie Q denied it in an email. Benjamin Mayo of 9to5 Mac sent him a note saying, I'm slightly obsessed with the anecdote about Jobs throwing a pen in your face. Is the story true? Eddie Q said, no, it's not. Rivaling Jim Dalrymple for terseness.
He could have just said nope.
Nope.
Come on.
Nope would have been great. Nope would have been kind of wheels within wheels. I would deny it, too, if Steve Jobs threw a pen at me. Doesn't mean he didn't.
Why would you deny it? Steve Jobs is famously grumpy.
He's dead.
It's a mark of honor.
I mean, no revenge.
Yes, the famous Steve Jobs threw a pen at me once.
Yeah, all right.
I survived.
Maybe. Okay, good.
I just don't know. Yeah.
All right. In his first days as CEO, Cook took two immediate actions. First, he promoted Eddie Q. Q had started out as an intern in one version of a story that he told everyone. He was plucked out of the IT department by Jobs during a meeting in which he had dared to write an opinion about the topic at hand, or voice an opinion about the topic at hand. When Jobs looked at him and told him to shut up, an undeterred Q spoke up again, causing Jobs to throw a pen at his forehead. Q, who by then figured he had nothing to lose, braced himself and offered his opinion for the third time. Jobs hired him. And now, in this, in the book, Heart of Empires, she says Q repeated this story to everyone.
Isn't that how George Steinbrenner hired Costanza on Seinfeld?
You're hired. I threw a pen at you. You didn't blink. You're hired.
You've got Moxie.
My favorite bit of silliness in Haunted Empire, which is Renee and I both reviewed. It's just not a very good book. And there are a lot of people who are like, you like Apple. That's why you don't like the book. It's like, you know what? I was hoping to get a really good argument from her about why Apple was haunted by Steve Jobs. There's nothing coherent in that book in terms of an argument. It's a series of anecdotes, much of it re-reported from other sources, and some of the original reporting is kind of bizarre. But the one that really got me was explaining that Phil Schiller has an aggressive personality because he likes to listen to Led Zeppelin and is a fan of the San Jose Sharks.
But that's the whole thing.
Hockey. So hello, aggressive Canada.
They have teeth.
The entire book is two plus yellow equals sandwich.
Right.
And I'm willing to believe that's possible, but you got to show me the math.
Yeah, show me the math. Show your work.
Yeah, it's just not. There is a good argument to be made. Mm-hmm. I might or might not agree with it, but there's a good argument to be made about Apple losing its way. But first, you need to establish, is Apple losing its way because they're not following Jobs or because they're following him too slavishly? Neither argument is made in the book. Or actually, both arguments are made in the book, even though they're contradictory to each other. And sadly, I think because you do this as a book instead of on the web, I think she wrote most of this book more than a year ago. iOS 7, which would be an argument that Apple has changed in pro or con, is mentioned for about two paragraphs in the afterword because it happened too late in the book, which is why covering anything this current in a book is probably a bad idea.
Now, books, they're dead. They're doomed.
I don't know why you'd. They got to fix that problem.
The whole thing
is so disconnected. For example, she argues that maps were a huge blunder, and then that Scott Forstall being fired was a huge blunder.
Well, wait a minute. He was fired because of maps.
Well, not really. He was fired for other reasons than maps. But I mean, all these arguments are going so many different directions, and there's just no structure or reason. Yeah. It's a random anecdote generator. And I find some of the anecdotes interesting. Not all of them queue up with what I've heard personally.
Tim Cook's typing teacher doesn't have a lot of perspective on his personality, but she's in the book.
They're so random. There's no book.
Tim was always a very aggressive typer.
Well, clearly somebody, either Yukari Kane or one of her researchers, went through the microfilm of his hometown newspaper, and they really wanted to show their work. So it's like Tim accepted this award when he was in high school for a speech he gave.
It makes me sad because she was a well-known Apple beat reporter. I believe she had the liver transplant story from Steve Jobs.
Yukari Watani Kane.
And I was expecting a really good book from this, and it turned out to be two pieces of cardboard with some paper in between.
In the afterword, she says she'd never written a story longer than 3,000 words before. And I think it shows. I think she's a good reporter. There's some good original reporting about Chinese factory workers in here that reads almost there. You take two or three chapters and it's a feature story.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened here is she has Apple knowledge, made a book proposal. This was the way to sell the book, and then had to try and make a book fit the concept and the title, which is a great title. And it's just kind of it's too bad. I was ready to be like challenged by this book, and it's just kind of a mess.
But wouldn't you, if you were the editor or publisher, wouldn't you kind of give it back and say, can you make this a little
can
more?
Make it a coherent
or do they just
argument?
Care about, like, it'll sell either way, so
who
cares?
They know it's going to sell. In fact, we're probably selling more copies even as we speak.
I put no link in my review.
I don't know. I feel
I didn't.
Like,
I didn't want to put a link.
I've heard that you shouldn't talk about it because it's a bad book. I feel like the reviews of this have been so specifically bad in saying it's not very well executed that I don't think it's going to sell as well as it would have if it had been controversial for like making these cogent arguments. Instead, it's just sort of a scattershot. Yeah.
We're basically saying this is the Fred Phelps of Apple books. Don't give it any more attention. Just let it be anonymous and slink off into the obscurity it deserves.
And they didn't sell at least one copy because of you guys, because I didn't buy one. So that was one. And I love your picture. Yeah. You know, the only thing I'm sad about you being here, Renee, I wanted to see your Lego on your new set that you built. What was it, a haunted house?
Oh, no, it's Lego Batman Arkham Asylum.
Arkham Asylum.
I wanted interesting things in the background. I like Lego. I like Batman. So I
figured... leave Kane's book in the background there?
Well, I have the Steve Jobs stuff thing and the Steve Jobs
the
figure
ICO,
on one side.
We have one of those. We don't have the bobblehead.
I have the Lego on the other. My God, I have God kids. One is 5 and one is 8, and they love the stuff. And it was an excuse to get them a ton of different sets as well.
But Uncle Renee keeps the building.
I got duplicates so that they don't...
Oh.
So now they say, this is on my side. I'm like, yeah, you can play with that. That's fine.
We've actually we've actually hired a full-time Lego builder here at the Brick House. Yeah, Jeff Needles. When does Jeff start? He's going to be June 1st. He's going to be a full-time Lego builder in residence.
So you're a Lego Brick House now.
Yeah, the Lego.
Lego Brick.
Now that that's not patented, we can say that. We're going to take. He majored in it, says Glenn Rubenstein. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Renee Ritchie, Jason Snell, great to have you both in-house. Andy Iannocco, more about Mac. In fact, we're going to say goodbye to two Mac institutions, Apple institutions, in our next segment. But first, a word from LegalZoom.com. I want to tell you, LegalZoom is not a law firm. They say, you got to tell people that. It's not. It's better than a law firm. They provide self-help services at your specific direction. This is National Start Your Business Month, and what a great time to start a business. LegalZoom makes it easy. You do not look, when we did our LLC for Twit, it was me back in 2005. I wasn't going to be able to hire a white shoe attorney or a law firm to do this. I went online, filled out the forms, got the LLC. Boom. $99 plus filing fees. That's it. Boom. It's important to do that. I trademarked the Twit logo. I trademarked the Twit name. That's $169 plus filing fees. You can also do a Chapter S or C corporation. And, of course, a lot of personal documents too, last wills, trusts, things like that. You might say, well, I don't, okay, here's a question. I had this question too. LLC or Chapter S or Chapter C, they have the legal plan attorneys that can give you legal advice. They'll connect you with the right attorney for a pre-negotiated flat rate. Very affordable, and so you can get the advice you need for your state, which is important. Read their profiles and unedited reviews from LegalZoom customers, and it'll give you a good idea of what those legal plan attorneys can do. So, absolutely, you could fill out the form, and I did. I just decided, I'm going to do an LLC in Delaware. I think I asked Kevin Rose instead of an attorney. It was all right. It worked. And by the way, we've never revised those papers. We're still using those documents. Here we are 8 years later, and they work. Start your own business. LegalZoom wants to help you start your own corporation or LLC. File your DBA. Get up and running quickly and easily and affordably. Find out why more than a million entrepreneurs, including me, use LegalZoom to start down the path of successful business ownership. And this month, to celebrate National Start Your Business Month, they've got a special deal, a free 3-month trial of the all-new QuickBooks, making it so much easier to run your new business. That's $119 value free when you enter MBW in the referral box at checkout. You'll also get $10 off your LegalZoom service. That's LegalZoom.com, discount code MBW. LegalZoom is not a law firm. They provide self-help services and can connect you with the right attorney. And they're great. LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code MBW.
Hey, Leo, is LegalZoom a law firm?
They're not a law firm. I'm glad you asked.
Okay.
But they can help you do some of your paperwork.
I wanted to know that. Thank you.
A lot of law stuff is not, you don't need a guy. You don't need a guy to a $350 an hour. How much an hour are attorneys? They're like $450 an hour.
It's like audio equipment. The price just goes up.
Unbelievable. But that's how you know you're getting a good attorney, because they cost more, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. I get attorneys by price. How much are you? Oh, $350. Oh, no, you're not good enough for me.
I put the pictures in the chat for you, Leo.
Leo, that sounds like the sort of thing you don't want to say on mic.
I just screwed myself.
Cars by how much they cost.
I just screwed myself.
I'm on the dealer lot and one costs $10,000. That's the one I'm buying.
So we can't go to Renee Ritchie's studio, but next time you're on camera, next week, we'll get to see this. Arkham Asylum. Wow. It loses some of the eerie spookiness when it's made out of plastic bricks.
You'd think so, but actually when it's lit properly, it is even spookier. It is the uncanny valley.
What is this guy? The half...
Two-Face.
Oh, sorry. I'm not up on the Batman canon.
Said everybody at the same time.
Read some comic books.
I believe that's the Harvey Dent version of the Two-Face character.
Okay, I'm clearly outmanned here. We're out-nerded. Julio Ojeda Zapata writing in the Minneapolis Twin Cities Pioneer Press. Sad to say, the end of the very first Apple dealer after 35 years. First Tech is shuttering its doors. Started in the early 70s. I mean, late 70s, I should say, when Apple first started selling Apple IIs. So it started as Team Electronics, became First Tech. And, you know, I've seen this happen. You probably remember Tom Santos and Mac Adam down on Harrison Street in sure. San Francisco. And I remember him going out of business some years ago. He said, I can't compete with Apple. They've got their own stores now. Yeah. They get the products, much better allocations than we can ever get. You can offer service and support as Tom did for years, but eventually people just stop going to you.
It's a different world now. I mean, the Apple retail stores have totally changed that game. I remember, I mean, this era, I mean, that's when I got my first Apple II. Was it a store? I remember walking in the doors. It was in Modesto, California, yeah. and it was like beige carpet with beige tables and beige computers on them.
Yeah.
And salesmen, and they were, it was a different world. And some of those stores survived by adapting, but it's not like, you know, when we were talking about Comic-Con earlier, when I go to Comic-Con, I hear comic book retailers talk about this, and they have their business is a little different, but it's also changing dramatically because they're, you know, people aren't buying stuff in paper anymore, and the rise of digital retailers, it's not that different than the rise of Apple retailing, where you can survive by being super, building a community, being super supportive, but even then, it's just a brutal business to be in because the world has changed.
Or being in an area that there is no Apple store and serving those remoter sure. areas. But look at a normal Apple store now. They have machines that are in the back that they just go and use to replace screens on iPhones.
Yeah, you can't get those machines.
Yeah.
Here's a video from when the Macintosh came out that features that store, the first tech store in Minneapolis. This harkens back to 1977 when the first Apples were sold. Where the 5 million machines sold all started in Minnesota, the first Apple store. It really is a bit of history. I don't think they had Hummers back then.
One of the biggest success stories, I guess, would have to be what was known as Team Number One. Team Number One was
that was
the
back when the Russians invaded. Of the, that was before the Wolverines beat them back.
Schwarzenegger had a
Team Central was the central organization.
You're listening to Wayne Westlaff, who was an
Apple Store. Nice
Apple Store. I remember this. I remember there was an Apple Store in San Francisco. They had every bit of Apple software. They've
now changed their name.
Every single Mac program
of the Team Electronics stores. But to my knowledge, that would make them the longest continuous.
No, you'd go in there to buy software,
Apple reseller,
yeah.
box.
And you talk to somebody, and they, you know.
And like a comic book store,
look at the Lisa.
You could talk to somebody who was mean and dismissive to you, or you could talk to somebody who was great and you wanted to come back and buy stuff from them.
That's certainly, Bell & Howell Apple II, very nice.
Oh, yeah.
But that's part of the problem, too. People who, silent type thermal printer.
Oh, man.
This is like for like two generations earlier, what looking at classic cars is what I get looking at.
Yep.
That's the silent type. I remember I printed out my first Apple soft program. On it.
Anyway,
Andy used to race those in his youth.
Great article by Julio in the Pioneer Press, and you can see it online as well. And he sent us a link to that. I'm glad he did. Thank you, Julio, for writing that story.
The other problem they're facing is that at this, remember that like when stores like that were doing really, really well, it wasn't just getting that interaction from Apple. It was also the idea that most people coming in, that was their first time they had an opportunity to actually put their hands on a real home computer. And now, one of the things that makes it so easy to order online is that I know what computers are. I know how they work. I know what I want. I don't have to have someone walk me through. Do I need a floppy drive or is the cassette tape going to be okay for me?
So and another late lamented website, MacFixit.com, which is owned by CNET at this point, and CNET silently shut it down. An article from Ted Landau, who was the creator of MacFixit way back, hard to believe, in 1996. It was a site I used all the time, a place to go to see what people were doing about bugs, whether this was a known bug. Yeah. He managed the site for 4 years, he said, sold it to Tech Tracker, which did the same thing for all computers, in 2000. He was editor to 2002. I guess the last man standing, Topher Kessler, who has been the primary contributor to MacFixit under CNET, has started a new site, Mac Issues. So same idea. We'll send people to MacIssues.com. I loved MacFixit. I used it all the time, and it was the place I'd go. Somebody would call me on the radio show and say, hey, have you heard about this? And I said, let me check. Let's see.
I know this is kind of inside baseball, but you know, CNET bought Tech Tracker because they wanted the version tracker. We think Mac users think about version tracker, but they wanted especially the Tech Tracker software database for download.com, and they wanted to integrate that data. They eliminated a competitor, but they also integrated all that updates data into their database, which was like strategic for them. The version tracker stuff, less so. And then there was MacFixit, which wasn't like the other two things. And so they inherited it, and it kind of kept going. But I think this was inevitable because that purchase was never meant to be about Mac fix it. And CNET's history with Apple-based information is not very strong.
Well, and I got to tell you, frankly, you guys don't run into this probably, but Windows users do all the time. Download.com, their download site, is notorious now for layering adware upon adware upon your downloads, because what you get is, instead of the original file, you get an original file wrapped in a downloader, which installs a lot of crap that is so close to malware, it's hair's breadth distance.
Some of my very first Mac software reviews are, I think, in that database somewhere.
Really?
Only because I worked at Ziff Davis.
Right.
The Ziff Davis software library went to ZDNet, which got bought by CNET. And I'm sure my five-mouse review of Drag Thing from 1995
still there. Anybody wants it?
We're like blues musicians that, like, you know, we're given $50 and a bottle of Ripple to record eight songs, and now it's owned by eight companies.
Michael Jackson owns it now.
There will be, however, a new Apple store in Istanbul. Simultaneously with shutting down Twitter, Turkey is now getting its own Apple store. I love the way they're building this under wraps. They've got it all hidden.
It's part of the magic, Leo.
The magic of the Apple store. Tim Cook, I think, is going to go there for the opening, but maybe now what's been going on in Istanbul, it might be inappropriate. April 4th will be the opening. It'll be interesting to watch. Istanbul is an amazingly beautiful city with wonderful people, and it is a little scary to see what's happening there right now. Let's see. What else do you want to talk about? There's always good news here in the Apple world. Apple and Google agreed not to poach each other's employees. It turns out it wasn't just Apple and Google. It was a dozen Silicon Valley companies.
A vast Silicon Valley conspiracy.
This one's real.
Absolutely.
This one's real. Yep. It is illegal. It is a form of trust. It's an antitrust violation to say, hey, look, if we said to Revision 3, we won't try to hire any of your people if you don't try to hire any of our people. The reason being, those employees are disadvantaged because they can't, you know, basically get competitive offers.
Yep. Right, right. Either to get a better job or to get you to give them more money in order to keep them. And this is the case of, I would actually say, well-off tech executives deciding that they want to protect the value of their company, and they don't really care if their employees don't have a free market for their services. And it's not only is this the rare conspiracy that's totally real, but it's so it's awful. It is just it is staggeringly terrible. And there are lots of people in technical fields in Silicon Valley who got shafted by this. It's really bad.
It started as an agreement between Jobs and Google's Eric Schmidt. It expanded to include companies like Dell, IBM, eBay, Microsoft, Comcast, Clear Channel, DreamWorks, the London-based public relations firm WPP. The Justice Department is focused basically on Adobe, Apple, Google, Intel, Intuit, Lucasfilm, and Pixar. Smoking gun memos galore on all this. I mean, they did not even really attempt to hide it particularly.
Not only that, but smoking gun memos from the very top. You have CEOs talking to other CEOs about what their policies are going to be. And so there's just absolutely no cover whatsoever against the awfulness of this scheme.
CEO of eBay, Meg Whitman, called Eric Schmidt to complain that Google's recruiters were hurting profits and business at eBay. Stop it. Stop it. So Eric Schmidt responds to her with a do not forward. Actually, this is to his own hiring team. With a do not forward email that says,
that'll stop the subpoenas.
Yeah, that'll stop. Whatever you do, don't tell anybody about this. Meg called to talk about our hiring practices. This was a rough call from a good friend. We need to get this fixed. Fire the recruiter immediately.
Ouch.
Yeah. For cause.
And imagine you're a developer who's got an okay job, or maybe it's a bad job, and somebody at Apple discovers that you are really talented. They see something you did, or they have beer with you, or you're a friend of a friend, and like, oh, we need somebody with your skills, and it's a much better job, and you never are allowed to have it.
Horrible.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous.
Do you think that it's possibly people did not know how wrong and illegal this was?
Well, I mean, Steve Jobs is a guy We can say lots of good things about him, but he's also the guy who refused to drive with a license plate just kept getting a new car every,
every six months.
So I think it's fair to say that Steve Jobs maybe didn't really care about some of these rules because he thought that this was he was protecting his company and didn't really care that this was a secret cabal that was preventing the freedom of
you
the workers
the hell
in the
with my engineers.
He would definitely have taken this personally and saying I'm defending my company against people who would attack it by taking away my key personnel. My cause is holy and righteous, and I will prosecute it until the last drop of my blood.
Yeah, but it also doesn't say, and I'm not going to go after their employees.
You know, one of the things that I missed in Haunted Empire, not to get back to that for a second, but I think one of the ways that Steve Jobs is truly haunting Apple to this day is his disregard for a lot of these laws. You see it in the it in the ebook settlement, which we can have issues with Amazon's monopoly on ebooks, but you can see it in the way that they approach that. Yeah. You can see it with this story, and you could argue that all of the patent lawsuits where he said we were going to go thermonuclear, these are I think some of the ways that Steve Jobs really is haunting Apple, because they're still trying to dig out from this stuff and paying the price for some of Steve Jobs' decisions.
I would buy your book in a second, Jason.
You know,
it's a comic book.
What's interesting, one company that you might expect in this list is not, is Facebook. Mm-hmm. Sheryl Sandberg says, I was approached with this idea and I immediately said, absolutely not.
I think Palm said that too.
One of the most Mr. Burns-ish emails in this paper trail was Steve Jobs, like the CEO of Palm, saying, I don't feel as though I can really go ahead with this. I don't think this is right. And then Steve saying, let's take a look at, we could fight this out with lawyers, but take a look at Apple's financial position and then take a look at your position. That's what I would recommend that you do.
Oh, my God. That's horrible.
Yeah. I think the only, I mean, I kind of quiver when I think about if Steve were still around and had to make some sort of public statement on this. Oh my God, that would have been an epic statement about you're all idiots. You don't understand how business works. I can't believe I'm even forced to waste my time to address this. But don't worry, fans of Apple and employees of Apple, we will defend our integrity against these people who wish to harm our company. Don't worry, I'm going to be fighting the good fight for all of us.
You want a free bumper? Fine, here's your free bumper.
Babies.
You're hiring it wrong. Did I do that right?
Apple is in talks with Comcast once again, but this time not about employees, this time about a streaming service. We'd heard before the Comcast-Time Warner merger that Apple was talking to Time Warner. So is this just continued talks?
Same story.
Seems to me that they said, well, now you need to talk to this guy now. So yeah,
we got a new guy. Right. New guy in town. Although I don't think that merger's happened yet. So
no, but they could probably see the writing on the wall.
They're being proactive.
It's smart. I mean, TiVo's got a deal with Comcast that gives TiVo boxes on Comcast Network access to all of the Comcast On Demand stuff. So I think, Comcast makes a lot of money selling internet services. Having it go through Apple, if that's a premium add-on like TiVo is, Comcast has shown in the past that they're happy. Like, look, you don't want our crappy box. You want to pay more for TiVo. That's fine. We'll give you all our stuff on TiVo, too.
So the Apple TV would become a Comcast, like HBO Go would become a Comcast on-demand service, or would have a Comcast app?
So Comcast service, I just switched 6 months ago to Comcast, got one of the new TiVos, so I got to discover all of this. Comcast has on-demand. They've got a bunch of live TV channels that stream on their app or on the web.
Right.
So if you're a Comcast subscriber, you can stream those. So you roll all of the stuff that they're bundling that's live and all the stuff that they're bundling that's on-demand.
You get the Streamcast, too, which is their streaming, like their Netflix competitor, I think.
I don't know. I haven't looked into that one. Okay. That may not be on the TV.
It's interesting. Comcast is really becoming,
so they've got
as
content,
you said, this net forward.
Well, and they own NBC on top of that, right?
Right.
So you could imagine bundling all of that Comcast stuff together for Comcast customers under an Apple TV channel, even of Comcast, and have access to all the on demand and all of the streaming live channels that they've got.
But can I get Channel 4? Can I get Channel 5? That would be the question. Because then I wouldn't need...
I bet you could get Channel 11 because they own that.
Yeah.
That's
a big question.
NBC I could get, but not
it would be an interesting idea, and it would be fascinating to me if Comcast said, we have such strength in internet that we're going to go over the top, which is what they call it when you take the cable box out of the equation, and say, we're going to put every channel we can, live and recorded, on the internet for our subscribers.
Yeah, you still have to have a... cable
right.
account and a Comcast.
But maybe you don't need a TV account anymore
right.
or something. I don't know.
Apple, in fact, I think I've mentioned this before. We were talking about the Netflix Comcast brouhaha, and there's a lot more in that, and we will talk about that at some point. But one of the things we learned at the time was that the best way to watch Netflix is on an Apple TV because yeah. they host it. They have their own CDN. Apple, of course, concerned about quality, says, you know what? We're not going to trust the public internet to bring you Netflix. We're going to do it ourselves. They've consistently had the best quality Netflix. So imagine if they do this with Comcast.
Absolutely. But the thing is, there's a couple challenges with this. One is that no one really knows what's happening yet. There's some rumors that they're going to actually build the Comcast box and sell it. So you'd be able to get an Apple version of the Comcast box. Some are that it would be an app and it would go on your iOS device or on your Apple TV.
Right.
But there's questions about whether they have the rights to the programming. Can Comcast just give them the rights that they have? Or do they need separate agreements? And another thing, and this again goes all the way back to Steve Jobs at All Things Digital, they had a deal with AT&T, which at least covered the country. This, they're going to have to go region by region in America to get the deals just to roll it out. Then they're going to have to, you know, talk to Canadian cable companies, talk to Lithuanian cable companies. It's an incredibly arduous go-to-market strategy. And I think the rumors heating up just show how difficult it is for Apple. And maybe originally they just wanted to make their own TV deals and get their own subscription service. But the cable companies make the cell companies look like the happiest, most go-luckiest companies in the world.
So my theory is that because Comcast is, pending this Time Warner merger, just gigantic and covers a huge amount of the U.S., that one way you might approach this is to say, we're going to build it with Comcast. That's going to show how it's done. It's going to be an Apple TV app. The other cable companies will give them our developer's kit. They can make channels that do the same thing using, be like Comcast, do it like that. And that might be the only way they can go forward, is to find the biggest name, make a deal with them, and use that as the example. Because otherwise, well, you're right, it would take, there would be dozens, yeah. if not hundreds, right. of yeah. different negotiations they have to
That's
do.
The beauty of see, Comcast. This is, it's massive.
It's, yes.
You only have to make a deal with one person, they got everybody. You know?
But this is why my main problem with these stories, and we've been following these for a couple of years now, is that sometimes it feels as though Apple's working really, really hard on a BlackBerry style phone where it could be the most beautiful thing ever, the most wonderful thing ever. That doesn't change the fact that people are moving away from phones with mechanical keyboards that run the way a BlackBerry does. I, in my imagination, and I stress the word imagination, I imagine Apple saying that why do we want to encourage people to get all of their content from cable companies forever? If we're really going to invest in the next 5 or 10 years, let's create a way. If we're going to burn so many lawyers into mortal combat against each other to make these deals happen, let's make it easier for cable channels individually to produce content for Apple TV. And they'd still have to go through a sign-in through the cable company to prove that they've actually created
that's what we've got now.
They have access to it. Well, but they could improve that too, and therefore then they don't have to make any deals with any cable companies. They can create an API that every single channel will love to use and will make it so easy, and they'll give these companies so much help that maybe you will stop using your cable box to access because these apps will run it that much better.
Well, you understand why Comcast wants this, because they do see the train coming down the tunnel, Adam, and so this is a way to kind of make that transition to, as you said, an over-the-top network, you know, internet-based system.
And it could be as simple as adding something like an accounts setting where you log in.
Here's what
Comcast,
the journal says. This right? is what the journal says. Apple and Comcast aren't close to an agreement. In fact, I saw a great conversation on TNT a couple of days ago, I think, or maybe it was Monday. Mike Elgin had a guy from Variety and a guy from Ars Technica. So you had the technical side and the Hollywood side, and both agreed this is never going to happen. Apple and Comcast aren't close to an agreement, according to the journal. Delivering the service quality Apple envisions would require Comcast to make significant investments in network equipment and other back office technology, according to people familiar with Comcast thinking. The companies also differ on how deep a relationship Apple should have with Comcast customers, because Apple wants users to sign on to the new device with Apple logins. They want to control customer data. Of course, Apple
like
does,
them.
Right?
Yeah.
They also asked for a cut of the monthly subscription fees paid by customers.
This also sounds like somebody's negotiating in the press.
Yeah, because these are – Wall Street Journal's got people from Apple and from Comcast side there in this article. Comcast, says unnamed sources, wants to retain significant control over the relationship with customers and the data. Of course, they both
do.
Furthermore, Apple, and this is the trick that you mentioned, must acquire significant TV programming rights from media companies. It's not just Comcast. No. And Comcast would want to ensure the price Apple has to pay to acquire those rights wouldn't cause the service to be priced higher than traditional pay TV. It's got to be less or the same.
It's a bag of hurt.
Yeah, that's why I think the most likely thing that'll happen is an agreement where you'll have to be a TV customer of Comcast. You can't cut your TV.
That's exactly
And then
right.
it'll be like HBO Go or something like that where you'll have access to the on-demand and the streaming channels, but it won't be a cord-cutting kind of thing because that's going to be that much more complicated.
Now, if they do that and they have an SDK for games, it could maybe be interesting enough that people be willing to swallow the login stuff.
Maybe.
But there's so many ways you can make the login stuff so much easier and so much faster. And I would see Apple fixing that as part of the solution to the problem.
Well, for me, it's not logging into the cable company. It's having to have anything to do with the cable company.
Exactly.
Like, I would love an Apple version of Netflix where Apple just had the rights to the content and they could do it. But there's so many, like Jason said, Comcast owns NBC. They also own the internet pipes. And do we get into an agreement? You know, Apple can buy a lot of infrastructure, but do they have to start paying Comcast the way that Netflix is now having to pay some companies? There's so many hurdles that these companies can put in Apple's way from them just delivering a direct-to-consumer product.
So tell me how this TiVo thing works. So I can buy a TV, because I have Comcast, and their cable box is horrific.
Yes.
The UI is terrible.
So you buy a TiVo, and you got to pay TiVo for that, and you got to pay a monthly or buy the lifetime to TiVo.
But then
so it's not cheap.
So it's like it's got a cable
But you get a cable card, and it's one of those. I think I've got one cable card. It's got six tuners on it, which is insane.
Yeah.
And
so you can record six shows at once.
Six shows at once. It's got a giant hard drive.
You're like that little old lady who had the eight VCRs in her house and was recording.
And TiVo's got its own streamer called TiVo Mini that you can put in other rooms, and they will stream off the hard drive.
So you recommend this?
Including live.
It's not cheap,
but actually, when I switched from DirecTV, I ended up the savings paid for the TiVo stuff. So it ended up being a wash for me. But it does have access to the on-demand stuff that you would expect a third-party cable box wouldn't have because TiVo made a deal specifically with Comcast. So to me, that shows that Comcast is at least open to making some of these deals.
Right.
If in the end, the people who are getting this, you know, they're still getting their money, basically. They're still getting that. You're still paying them for your cable.
That's all
internet.
They care about.
And that's what they want.
Comcast has their Xfinity box, and there's a TiVo box. But I look at my local cable box, and it's still an SD interface that looks like it was developed in Soviet Russia. I've gone from a Trio to iPhone 5S, and I still have a box. There's just no innovation in that industry.
There's still screens in the TiVo Romeo that are SD. Yeah. Most of them are not now, but there are still a few that are. It's baffling.
So do I go to TiVo to get this, or do I go to Comcast?
TiVo. If you want to get it, just, you know.
But then I have to talk to Comcast and get
a cable card? You have to go get a cable card from Comcast.
That's not fun.
I waited in line at my local Comcast office.
That's the best way to do it.
For 10 minutes.
Yeah.
They handed me the card. I plugged it in. That was it.
I have found if you go to the Comcast office, those guys are
Don't have the guy come to your house.
Well, no, or call the phone on the phone.
No.
You know, I have a Google Voice number which has a Baltimore area code. So they keep routing me to Comcast Baltimore. Say, no, I'm not in Baltimore. That's just my phone number. Anyway,
well, I through a 20-minute story that is collapsed down to I rearranged the furniture in my living room and suddenly became an awesome place to watch TV. And, you know, there you go. That's the whole story. But then I thought, gee, I should like get a cable box installed here because now this is a place where I like to like hang out and watch TV. But I put that off for about a month, and then I realized that, well, look, all the shows that I really, really like are on Hulu Plus. I don't need that. A lot of the shows that I watch in clip form, I can get through YouTube. I don't need that. I've got the Sling Player app on my Roku, so I don't have to transfer something from the cable box I've got upstairs. I really think that I'm so close to simply saying that I don't need regular cable TV anymore. And I'm a middle-aged old man. I'm not one of these young hipsters with a poochie, you know, slam down the Mountain Dew and riding the skateboard or whatever it is the kids are doing these days. I'm just not convinced that making cable TV work better is the solution that any forward-thinking company is going to be really pursuing very, very hard at this point.
By the way, if you get your TiVo from Weeknd's, you can get an 8-terabyte drive in there.
Yeah.
So, like, I would run a record 1,280 hours.
You could literally record for a while and then drop off the grid.
I could record all six channels.
I'm, I'm, I don't know how you do this, Jason. I'm stressed out enough knowing that there are like at least four different cable series on Netflix that I can. I still haven't seen House of Cards. I know that, oh man, I have to see it, but they're all there. And how am I going to get through the stress of watching all of these shows at once? If I had six shows recording at once,
the six
as it is, I still haven't seen this week's Amazing Race. That's coming. Now,
the six tuners is outrageous, but it means that there are never any conflicts, which is kind of nice, especially if I'm recording sports. I have not even filled the hard drive up halfway. Not to plug TiVo here, but their Netflix app on the TiVo is actually pretty good now too.
That's
how we watch Netflix now, is also from the TiVo.
Oh, not your Apple TV.
The Roku version of the Netflix app kicks Apple TV's butt. Mm. It's like it's so far behind at this point. Would you stick
around after the show and help me buy a TiVo?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. And anybody wants to continue to watch, we'll do a special.
Helping Leo buy TiVo.
Helping Leo buy TiVo.
Click the buy button. I mean,
it's that easy. Did you get it on Amazon or?
I think I got it straight from TiVo, but
I'm
also
just glad they're still around. I thought they were going to be. Yeah. I thought they were dead. Really did thought that there was no.
They got a lot of patents, and now they're making deals with cable companies.
Good. That's key. Anything not to use that crap box.
And they never had good luck in Canada because they just could, we have no cable cards. We have very limited access for them, so it's. It's still hard.
Now, they're moving to the cloud now. Their idea is they're going to be able to run their software on the cable company's systems. And so you'll be able to just like do all the – it's like an internet DVR over cable companies. So they're finding ways to stay in business.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Because they always
Box
did have
is great.
They always did have a better UI than anybody else. Yeah. Okay. This is Twitch special number 173. Leo buys a TiVo. Coming up next. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. You got an old gadget? They don't buy TiVos, but they, or unfortunately, Scientific Atlanta set-top boxes. I wish they would. But they will buy your old iPhone, your old iPod, anything from Apple. They'll even buy broken iPads and iPhones because there's really a market for those. Gazelle.com. We saw some beautiful gazelles when we were in San Diego at the Safari Park, and they do have horns that look just like that. Were those Thompson's gazelles? I can't remember. I think they were. Gorgeous. A gazelle is not only a beast that runs fast across the African plain, but a place to go with your old iPhone. They will buy old Blackberries. You got an HTC One? You want the new one? Sell it there. An LG, a Motorola, Nokia, or Samsung phone? Sell it to Gazelle. Now, here's how it works. You've got 30 days on that quote. So maybe you got an iPad 3 and you want to get the new Apple iPad 4, which they're now offering. Let's get an offer on my $165 for my decent condition third generation iPad. Now, here's the beauty part. I don't have to sell it today. I have 30 days to take advantage of that. That offer cannot change, even though it's a fairly safe bet that anything you price on here is going to be worth less in 30 days. You lock it in for 30 days. When you've got enough stuff in your Gazelle cart, and I suggest you go through all those drawers and everything, get everything together. Pull the trigger, check out. They'll send you a box, prepaid postage and everything. You pile it in there. If you forget to wipe your data, don't worry. Gazelle will do that for you, of course. And then they'll send you a check or a PayPal credit. Or if you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, and who doesn't, you can get an extra 5% with the Amazon gift card. Gazelle.com. Go there now. Get an offer for your iPhone, your iPad, or any one of your old junky products. Gazelle is incredible. They've paid more than $100 million now. To 700,000 customers. It's free shipping. It's fast processing. It is the way to sell your gadgets. This is the way to do it. Who's got an old gadget? I bet you do. Gazelle.com. Try it today. You're gonna love it. Renee Ritchie's here from iMore.com, a mobile nation site. The editorial director at IDG, Jason Snell. He is editorial director for both Macworld and PC World. Go figure.
And Greenbot, which is our new Android site. So crazy.
Greenbot?
Greenbot, yeah.
Actually, you know, what's nice is all of you are kind of agnostic nowadays.
Tech Hive, which is great.
Greenbot. Oh, I get it, because an Android is a little green bot.
See, yeah.
Took me a while. You've already got a hands-on with the new HTC One there. Nice.
I love those names. Like, you know, iPad, you've got to put something in the brackets so people can tell it apart from the last one.
This drives me crazy.
Yeah.
It's just nuts. We have to say fourth generation iPad.
Yes.
because they decided not to make a distinction. We have to say it.
I kind of like that better than having it be iPad A0139,
well,
right? Just say the year or the generation and let it go.
We got my mom one of the new iPads for her birthday, and she just kept searching new iPad case, and it was just like it was the most irrelevant results possible.
Right. Well, and the HTC One is the M8. The old one was the M7, but they call it the same thing, HTC One, so... That's got to be confusing for consumers, I would think.
I really like how did they add it in Mavericks that if you go to more info about your Mac, it now says 11-inch mid-2013. It's actually on there.
I'm getting mid-2013.
But at least that's what Apple calls it. So if you they'll say, tell me what it says there.
Yeah.
one of our writers, you know. Derek Kessler, he went through a thought experiment of actually going to a store and trying to buy one. You're going, I want the new one. Which one? The new one, HTC One. I don't know, the new one, the new Samsung. No, the new one. My friend said, get the new
one. It's the new one. One. Yeah, it's like,
I come to the store, I want a phone, yep.
Who's
on
first?
New phone, yep. What do I say? Get the new phone, the new one. That's the one I want. What do you mean?
He just said the new one. I have to say, it's a little depressing, though, when you have the brand new Mac Pro and they call it the late 2013 Mac Pro. It already is out of date. It's already last year's Mac Pro.
Got to buy a new one, Leo.
If they had one.
There's a gold one coming, Leo.
It's not. It's champagne. It's not C-3PO gold.
Apple and Google agree with Microsoft and Yahoo that it's okay to read your users' emails. Actually, the Microsoft story is not a particularly scary story, although I think people interpret it that way, probably because of all the Microsoft Scroogled ads in which they assert that Google's reading your email. And then... they read the email of an employee who is stealing company secrets. And it scares everybody to death. But if you look at the terms of service in all of these online services, iCloud, Gmail, Yahoo Mail, and, of course, Microsoft's Outlook, it says, under certain circumstances, we can read your mail.
Right. The question is, I think people always understood that that might be like a subpoena or something. But in Microsoft's case, there was a writer who received Microsoft intellectual property. It's absolutely true. And they're like, oh, that's one of our sites. Let's read his mail.
Yeah, Hotmail at the time.
Yeah.
Well, the foolish thing is that they were using MSN Messenger, Hotmail, and SkyDrive to share all this stuff stolen from Microsoft.
Yeah, like, clearly, iMessage should have been used.
Yeah. Yes. Then you'd have to get a subpoena. Yeah. Microsoft says, and I think this is good, that they from now on, they will have a process that will duplicate the subpoena process.
It's like a quasi-legal
They'll have a review by a former judge, general counsel who will review this and see if it steps up to the level that you would have to submit to get an actual subpoena before they do that. And what I'd like to do is hear Yahoo, Apple, and Google say the same thing. Now, Apple, for some reason you trust Apple, right? They seem to be really working hard to protect privacy.
Also, the fallout from this kind of stuff. Like you got to imagine that Microsoft didn't think about the fallout, but now everyone's going to think about the fallout of this kind of activity.
Well, this happened, and we were talking about this yesterday, or maybe it was on Twitter, but this happened before the Snowden revelations, this Microsoft thing. And I think post-Snowden, post-NSA revelations, everybody's now a lot more aware of this issue. And had that happened, like in the last few months, Microsoft probably would have been a little bit more careful.
Also the language in the Microsoft's terms of service was a lot more explicit than Google's or Apple's, where it's saying that you would expect these services to say that please don't expect that your mail will never be read by anybody inside, because it's possible that for customer service purposes, we're going to have to make sure that things are working properly. It's possible that what we are doing with your mail just to keep the service running meets some legal definition of we're looking at your mail, and so that's what we're doing. In Microsoft, I think there's actual explicit language saying we will look at your mail if it's in defense of Microsoft's interests.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, let's red flag that one and circle around when we talk about whether we're going to use the service or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that there's this. If there's not this term as in the social conversation that's become like a standard Russian dash cam video, this is your basic Russian dash cam video accident of, yeah, you're getting confidential information from Microsoft via a Microsoft free mail account. Yeah, let's reshare that 40 times because that's going to be epic.
When Tim Cook said we've got products coming out in some brand new categories, we thought he was talking about the iWatch. Maybe he was talking about a 12-inch Macintosh.
I would like one, Leo.
Category though?
I'm not sure that's a new category.
Oh, come on, give me a break.
In the broadest, most possible definition.
It's a very Samsung-y thing. They got the 11-inch, the 12-inch, and the 13-inch.
Yeah.
I somehow think that if they have a 12-inch MacBook, they won't maybe have the 11.
Well, the 11-inch, I don't...
Oh,
I
think, well, first I, of all, think, this think, is a rumor.
I think the 13-inch would go, because they've got the 13-inch MacBook Pro, and they're now thin and light enough, and the battery life is now similar enough that I think you have a lot of people confused about, do I want the Air or do I want the Retina? So if right. this is true... I would put my money on losing the MacBook Retina.
This is a leak from a forum. Actually, it's a forum post on WeiPhone.com, a Chinese site, WEI. And although the author of the post has posted leaks and legitimate leaks and photos mm-hmm. in the past, so has some credibility, the poster says there will be a new MacBook Pro line as well as new 12-inch notebooks. The MacBook Air updates are coming soon, he writes. MacBook Pro updates won't occur until September.
Like last year.
New 12-inch notebook without fan assembly comes with a new trackpad, the design that doesn't include the mechanical button.
Boo.
How would... Yeah. Oh, you tap instead of click. Mm-hmm. I don't mind that, because I actually do turn on tapping. But you like the physical... Yeah. You don't like that?
That's one of the first things I do. I turn off tap to click, because that just gets so many bad clicks. Yep. And also, what's wrong with actual having mechanical feedback? The report indicates that they've got something to actually replicate the sensation of a mechanical, some sort of tactile feedback that says you've just clicked something. I don't know.
Like a haptic thing. Like a finger trampoline.
Electrical surge. The interesting thing is, you know, 12-inch, Jason's got an 11.6-inch screen because Apple just rounds these things.
So that is almost a 12-inch
screen. So who knows what 12 will be, 12-point-something. But they've been trying to do a Retina MacBook Air for a while now.
That's what I care about, is the Retina, not
absolutely,
the size.
But they just can't cram enough battery in. And if you look at Retina's always a compromise. Like the iPad 3 had to get thicker and heavier. The Retina iPad Mini had to get slightly thicker and heavier. If they have to get slightly bigger to make a Retina iPad Air, and it goes from 11.6 to 12.x, I'm okay with that, because it's hard to go back from Retina. You start getting sandpaper on your eyeballs. I mean, it's just...
I don't have the same problem.
No sandpaper?
I hear lots of people say that. I respect that opinion, but I have a problem with the non-Retina phone screen. I have a problem with the non-Retina iPad, but I don't keep my face 8 inches away from my laptop screen. It's far enough away that I certainly notice the improvement in a Retina display, but I would not have bought a MacBook Pro specifically so I can get a Retina screen. It's not that big of a deal breaker for me.
Well, I do go back and
Renee is right. If they have to compromise anything that's good about the MacBook Air to get a Retina display in there, it's not worth it. It has to be the $999 machine that gets 41 hours of battery life mm-hmm. and weighs about as little as a second thought.
This is the lightest Air we've ever made.
We think it's the lightest.
The thing that scares me about that report is the fanless thing. Yeah. Because, these processors can generate some heat. That sounds a little bit like a gimmick. Like, it's like, well, fans make noise and we don't like noise, so we'll take the fan out. And as somebody who had that original MacBook Air that overheated and turned off a core so you couldn't use it, but it was running, but you couldn't use it. That scares me that you end up with other heat problems for something that I'm not sure why does it need to not
thermal
have a fan?
Exactly. It's a solution to a problem that no one's complaining about.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they come up with a clever way to do it, and that'll be great, but I get worried that is a bunch of problems waiting to happen.
It's 12 inches because there's going to be a slipstream in the middle of the computer like Leo's Mac
like
Pro.
Like my Mac Pro.
it's like the McLaren. There's going to be like a little wing that pops up in the back to signal that's going faster than...
Spoiler.
So there were rumors of a long time about Apple working on an ARM-based MacBook Air, and Broadwell looks like it's going to be good enough that they won't have to make the sacrifices that ARM would mean.
How much rewriting would they have to do, though? I mean,
what is
that?
It's probably already done. I mean, the same way they had Intel running for years.
I bet they have it working.
Yeah.
But what about apps? They're going to have to all be rewritten.
It'll be as painful as the Intel transition was, but I think that with Broadwell and with the ability to do what they're doing now, they sort of don't have to make that switch
anymore. What's the Intel emulation like on a Broadwell chip?
Well, Broadwell is Intel, so Broadwell is going to be their next generation, whatever after it
I'm
after
sorry, what's the X, I shouldn't say what's the Intel, what's the x86 emulation like?
That's going to be a good question.
Yeah, can you do it?
But I think the power savings, because the computers have gotten fast enough, all of us can do anything we need to do on a modern computer, so Apple is changing
speed
tactics
is
and doing
issue.
Battery life
battery
now,
life.
And power
display.
Efficiency, display, so these are the things that are increasingly important, and Intel was in trouble, I think, there for a while with their CPUs, but now with Haswell and with Broadwell, I think they're going to get to a place where they'll do everything that an ARM-based Air could have done.
The same leaker says iWatch, not for a while, still just prototype. Maybe not even till 2015. late 2014 at best.
I would rather they take their time and do it. I don't understand the Apple's not doing new categories. Apple needs a watch. 60 days or they're dead. Yeah. I do not want a bad iWatch. I would pay good money not to get an iWatch until it is ready.
Yeah.
I think if anything, all the movement on the Android side and the Pebble side this year gives, if anything, it buys Apple some more time. Because there's interest in it. There are people who wear Pebbles all the time that like them, but there is not that sort of mass consumer support that would tell Apple, oh my God, we really have to ship this year or else we're going to start missing that boat. So I have no inside information on what their timeline is on a watch or, excuse me, a wearable device. But whereas maybe 4 months ago, I would have said, I'm pretty sure 2014. Now, late 2014 at the earliest, I wouldn't even be surprised to see 2015.
If you watch Jimmy Fallon and Billy Joel duet using Loopy on an iPad, perhaps you're curious about the technology used. I'll jump ahead a little bit here. It was pretty cool. They each had handheld microphones. They had an iPad between them, and they would sing the loops from AppleInsider.com. The story of how they did it. So they're recording the loops and then singing over on top of it. But it turns out they had an Apogee Quartet as well connected to the iPad Mini. That allowed them to have standalone microphones. I have to say, the Loopy app is now half price on the App Store. Smart marketing move. And I think a lot of people downloaded it immediately and found out you actually have to have talent to use it.
Somebody went from deciding that perhaps next year I'll replace my 10-year-old car to let's buy that cabin cruiser boat next week.
Yeah.
That was a gift.
Well, the iPad's only $400 or $500. The Apogee Quartet is $1,400.
Billy Joel there. You're going to want him to sound good.
Yeah, I think it's perfectly fair to get the. I haven't used this. Anybody use this? It's a multi-channel audio interface for the iPad, which is a very interesting idea. Four analog inputs. So it has mic preamps and phantom power. So that means you can use these mics, any mic you want, good mics. Low latency monitoring. USB 2.0 audio, 24-bit, 192 kilohertz, A to D and D to A. Good quality. That makes an iPad pretty much like a recording studio.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty impressive that the iPad is a device that can actually exploit audio of that high bit rate, too, and keep up with it. If anybody's looking for a story, of course you can do that with an iPad if you have a $1,500 device.
Yeah.
But really the focus is, no, if you have a source of really great audio, the iPad is not going to dumb it down. It's going to actually treat it like really good audio.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
It's the same thing with the iOS devices becoming interfaces to so many other cool parts of technology.
Yeah.
Great article by, again, Mike Elgin. Mike gets more bonus points here on Cult of Mac about a technique that is built into iOS 7, we've known about for a long time, called mesh networking. It allows an iOS 7 device that has no access to the internet to get to the internet via another iOS 7 device. And there's an app, and by the way, I downloaded it and don't. It's stupid. Fire Chat.
Consider it a proof of concept.
It's a proof of concept. Thank you. Because, boy, the chats I was watching were wow.
It can deliver an emoji con in a way that's never been done before. Yeah,
but if you remember those old cartoons of the guy jumping across the river one crocodile at a time, sort of what you're doing here. It's multi-peer. So here's a little bit of Wi-Fi, a little bit of Bluetooth, another little bit of Wi-Fi, and you're sort of trying to find your way to someone else.
And you see everybody else along the way, which is a little weird. But I could set it up. If I'll install it right now, we'll put it on here. It's an iPhone app, but I could put it on my iPad. Fire Chat. So tell me about the mesh networking. You know, Mike says this is a feature that can be used in a lot of other ways. It could be very significant. AirDrop uses it, I guess.
Yeah. It sort of brings a lot of things together. So you have these Bluetooth 4.0 low energy, which sort of already piggybacks on Wi-Fi. You have these devices which do peer-to-peer Wi-Fi networks, like ad hoc Wi-Fi networks. And what this basically does is neither of us are connected to the internet, but, you know, there's another device. Maybe I can get to that device. And maybe he's connected to the internet. I can do a short hop off of him and then find a Bluetooth connection to somebody else. And it's sort of like, literally, you're in a spacesuit pushing yourself from asteroid to asteroid to get to another planet. You're not relying on an existing highway or infrastructure to do it.
Yeah.
The big deal is that it makes communications possible even if you don't have line of sight. So that, I mean, how many times have you been in a hotel, like at a conference, where you're the only room that doesn't have access to Wi-Fi or can't get a signal on the phone? But that's okay, because there are 100 other people inside the hotel who also have this, who also have the same sort of device running the same sort of operating system. And so, so long as you can reach the phone, the iPad in the room next door, and the iPad can reach the iPhone two doors down, you can basically have the snaky sort of route that gives you internet, even though you're basically in the Econolodge dungeon.
Yeah.
Mesh networking is the next big thing, especially with a lot of wearable devices. As you move around, the idea that you could then connect to something that could connect to the internet is very important.
Yeah, there won't be an LTE radio in a watch for a while now. But also in third world countries or in places where people are interfering deliberately with the traditional internet, it just it enables communications that might not be as outstanding as we're used to in our broadband-soaked world, but will just let you have a connection under hostile circumstances.
But meanwhile, FireChat will
feature one laptop per child.
FireChat brings back the old AOL rooms, because I tell you, whatever's going on in here, it's can you see that, Chad? I don't know if you can.
I was told that there's very inappropriate things that might go on. So I
go ahead and show it. If there's anything inappropriate, I'll hide it with my hand. But this is the FireChat interface. It's just like, hey, guys, how are you? Yo, I'm all right. You? Good. Vancouver, St. Louis, Indianapolis, Union City. There's also nearby, and there's somebody, a couple.
Hello. I also have mesh network.
Yeah.
Do you have mesh network?
Yeah.
Hi, I have mesh network.
Yeah.
Again, proof of concept.
Yes. Anybody who's watching the show wants to join me in FireChat, just, I don't know how you even.
Type whatever you want. It'll be right in the feed. It sounds like it's going to be a problem, but I'm sure everybody's going to be nice and polite.
Anybody watching twit.tv? Yeah, it was in the Indian Ocean. Well, that's another subject. Don't hurt. So there's a bunch of stuff going on. I don't even understand what the point of this is. It reminds me of one of those old AOL. Hey, hi, iPhone. How are you? Good to see you. Everybody in our audience is now trying to get on FireChat. But so I'm not sure. I guess I could then, if I knew somebody else was on, I could then add them, right?
You've got to imagine there'll be other applications.
I'm Leo,
out.
If you want to say hi. Huh.
There'll be things like AirDrop, and there'll be other applications that come out that take advantage of multi-peering. There's a good.
Yeah, that's nice. So if you don't have to be on the same Wi-Fi, I don't have to be on the same Wi-Fi network as you to use AirDrop. We can share files just
I've
because
done it on airplanes. NS Hipster had a good article on the multi-peering technology just in general, and it's something that developers. That's the nice thing is that it's not just proprietary to AirDrop. Apple made an API, so any developer can use it for their products.
Yeah. I was talking to someone on Twitter about this when they were suggesting if Apple wants to collect fitness data, wouldn't it be a cool idea to have a restaurant, when they give you your check, that there's a way that you can actually download the information on the nutritional info of what you ordered? And I had a debate with a couple of people, because everyone was saying, oh, it should be Bluetooth. And I said, well, maybe if it's just a QR code, then they could take the receipt with them and it could actually make it work. Because one of the problems of wireless communication is that there's always that first step of establishing the connection and making sure that both of these are on the same wavelength. One of the great things about technologies like mesh is that it's zero configuration. It's just the fact that these two are simply in the same, consuming the same amount of oxygen means that they have the ability to talk to each other.
I'm just having fun chatting.
Are they saying something ribald?
Anything you can share with the class,
Leo? I put a selfie on here.
It is dangerous to have this app open while Leo's trying to host
the
show.
This is worth $1.90 free or four a minute, Leo. you promise you'd show us the goods.
It's really a strange experience to join a chat room where people are not talking about anything in general, and it's
the
all just
chat happening. Roulette of peer-to-peer.
Yeah, it's like chat roulette. Yeah, I'm just going to leave it running, and we won't show it on the air. But
this would be a good time to have that monocle like in your eyes, so that you can have it pop out when you see something.
What? as badly as the Apple 5C sold. And I think everybody's saying it sold badly. It beat BlackBerry. It beat Windows Phone. It beat every Android flagship in the fourth quarter. And it still was a flop.
Well, but that by whose definition? I mean, it's by media's definition. It's a flop. Maybe by the amount of phones of iPhone 5S sold, it's not the same. But a lot of companies would give their eye teeth to have that sort of flop.
Yeah, including Samsung.
There have been some fairly credible reports that Apple maybe made a lot of these and didn't sell them and had more inventory than it expected. So maybe Apple thought this would be a bigger hit.
Well, they said that, right?
But I know people. I see people buying them. I know people in my family and friends who've bought them instead of the 5S because they don't need the 5S and they want to get the cheaper
My mom reviewed it for iMore last week for me.
Yeah, my mom is going to get one when she's visiting us in a couple months. Yeah,
it's kiss of death. Mom's iPhone.
I really get tired. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Andy.
I was just saying, I really get tired of conversations like this because unless you are running Apple, what do you care how much the 5C is, how well this or poorly this 5C is selling? So long as it's making profits for Apple, what do you care that it's a quote dog or quote it's a failure or and even on the other side of it, what do you care that it's outselling the Galaxy S5 or whatever other phone? You should not care about
this. I'm sorry, I brought it up.
I'm not saying to you because again, you are rational and also you're at least willing to exploit this story for content. So, and I can respect that. But when people are saying, you know what, I've got this to say to all the Apple haters out there. Your so-called failure phone is actually outselling your precious little Windows.
The only where I care is like, I want the HTC One to sell enough that they make an HTC Two. So, because that company doesn't have as much money as Apple.
Yeah.
Apple will be just fine regardless of the sales of this phone. But I do want them to make more experimental phones.
So what you're saying is if you love Apple, you should all go out and buy the new HTC One.
If you love HTC, like I'm going to get one because I love HTC. Yeah. I love them since the Trio Pro.
It's our way of, it's like Kickstarter. Yeah. We're just supporting them to continue
absolutely
doing their fine
work. You can have my money.
So basically, documentary about ska band mixtapes and HTC.
Yeah, that's
same
it.
Same sort of like emotional response.
Same thing, exactly. Hey, good news if you use iTunes Radio, and I really think Apple's going to try to promote the fact that this thing exists. Because you know what? It's great. But I don't think anybody knows it even exists, right? It's because it's kind of hidden away in the music app.
Music app, right?
You've got Spotify or Google Music or whatever you've already got working. You don't.
US and Australia only still.
Well, okay, sorry, Canadian.
I know. I would use
it. But one rumor is that they're going to separate it out and make it a standalone app, which I think is a good idea. They've added some new channels, including, by the way, NPR now. So this isn't music, which I find interesting. There, you can listen to a stream of NPR talk news shows. Yeah, they've got great playlists under the featured stations. You create your own stations.
I'd like to see a Twitch channel on iTunes.
Yeah, why don't? So, what do I need to do to get a deal like NPR? Oh, now you zoom in, Chad. What do I get? What do I got to do to do that?
It'll be interesting to see if they do that, and then who their partner deals like Siri and Apple TV, or if they open it up a little bit.
Yeah, let me turn it up and see what they're talking about now on NPR.
It's Kraftwerk.
Of course. Of course it is.
The system is down. The system is down. The system
is down. Welcome to the end of our podcast day.
Yeah, because the last thing I heard was talk, so I don't know what. This is part of the problem. You can't tell what you're listening to.
Station break.
Yeah, it's a station break or something. But anyway.
That would actually be great if they started using, you know, some of these features for podcasts and things like that.
Wonderful.
So shuffle through those.
Yeah. Apple, I take back everything I said.
Put me on your radio.
Put me on your radio. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, you picks, ladies and gentlemen, get it together. Oh, yeah. Give me something. Something you can use in Canada.
Yes.
Okay.
And Petaluma.
But first, a word from Audible.com. Audible is our wonderful, wonderful source of audiobooks, more than 150,000 strong of all kinds, read by some of the best readers. These books take life in your mind, and whether you're in the car or at the gym, whether you're walking the dog or doing the dishes, Audible is just a fabulous way to read. And it's pretty much the only way I do books these days. I know Andy and Jason are big Audible fans, so I won't steal their thunder. What are you listening to, Jason, these days?
I just finished a book that's excellent. It's actually nominated for the Nebula Award, which is from the Sci-Fi Writers Association. It's from a local author. She's in Berkeley, named Helene Wecker, I believe it's pronounced. The Golem and the Genie. And it's really good. It's set in like late 19th century New York City, and it's about immigrants. And among the immigrants is a genie who's trapped in human form a golem that has been made by a kind of renegade rabbi as a wife for a guy who dies during his passage to North America. And so she's trying to make her way in the Jewish society of New York, and the genie is trying to do it in the Middle Eastern society. And then they meet, and there are interesting things that happen. And it's a lot of fun.
Sounds like an Isaac Bashevis singer story that went horribly, horribly wrong.
It's funny. It's got a little feel like maybe even like Cavalier and Clay or something like that.
Oh, I love that. That was a great book.
And it's really good. I liked it a lot.
And George Guidall narrates it, who's one of their – I just love his voice. He's a great narrator. Let me play a little bit of the audio from this. This is the Golem and the Genie.
Knocked on the door and waited.
He's a great...
After some minutes, he heard a shuffling step. The door opened a hand's width, revealing a man of perhaps 70. He was bald, save for a fringe.
You see, you listen to these, and you just kind of go, wow, I just can't wait to hear more of this. This is a drive around the book, a drive around the block book.
Yeah.
Golem and the Genie. Okay, there's a pick for you. We're going to get one of these for you for free. I'd like to give you some choices, though. Andy Anako, what are you listening to?
Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, but a really, really special set of recordings. This is the radio drama that was starring Sir John Gielgud as Sherlock Holmes and his long, long time like acting partner, Sir Ralph Richardson as Watson, with some cameo appearances by Orson Welles and the rest. And oh boy, I have bought a couple of different versions of Sherlock Holmes stories like in my day of my using of Audible. But as soon as I clicked on, I heard about this and I clicked on it. You heard Sir John Gielgud.
I love him.
Speak like this and say, yeah. Well, it was very simple. Like, oh goodness, I want to listen to that. I want that on my every device I own that can play. I even want them on devices that can't play audio just so that I've got that touch of class in my wallet at all times.
16 episodes, 7.5 hours. Let me play a little bit of this.
Managed to get hold of some imprudent letters, Watson, which she wrote some time ago to a penniless young fellow in the country. Only imprudent, mind you, but they'd be quite sufficient to break off the match.
And you're commissioned to meet him?
Yes, and make what terms I can.
Here comes Mrs. Hudson.
He's here, Watson. Will you let him in?
These are great. So these are radio plays.
Mr. Holmes' rooms.
Will you come in, please?
I'm glad to listen to this, and then I will start talking like that from now on.
Yes. Wow, that's great. These are from the mid-50s with Sir John Gielgud, Sir Ralph Richardson, and yes, a little Orson Welles as the evil Moriarty. Perfect casting. I knew Moriarty was an American, damn it. All right. So how do you get this for free? Here's how. You go to audible.com/MacBreak. You'll be signing up for the Gold account. And that means you get a book a month plus the daily digest of either the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. But your first month's free, so you cancel any time in that first 30 days. You won't pay a penny, but you will keep your book, whatever book you choose. And I think you just want to keep doing it because every time I get a new Audible book and I start listening, I just love it. I'm such a fan. And, yeah, they have these old radio shows too, which is great, including the original radio plays of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which are a must for everybody's collection. Get it free, audible.com/MacBreak. All right, Renee, your pick of the week, sir.
My pick of the week is, it is not a new app, but it is a new version of an app. There's an app called Transit. Now, Apple famously with iOS 6 dropped transit directions, bus directions, right. Train directions, metro directions or subways, depending on where you live. So Transit app has been trying to fill that void. Full disclosure, it's a Montreal company, so I'm affectionate from them to begin with. Small shop, and what they've just released is their iOS 7 update. So they made a lot of waves in the beginning because they had an almost Windows Phone Metro-like look for their app. But it was very elegant, very well done. Now it's still not exactly the way iOS 7 is, but it's got a lot more iOS 7 feel to it. They've been adding more places all the time. It originally launched, I think, with 2 or 3 cities, but they're adding it.
62 cities now.
Yeah, and it's an arduous process. Anyone's wondering why Apple didn't do it the first year, you have to go to municipal authorities or data companies and one by one get the rights to use their data.
Well, there's a standard. There's an open data standard. And, you know, this is the thing that kind of irks me. A lot of municipalities have decided that this should be a profit center for them. So they've released their own apps and they don't support open data. So, and that's very frustrating. I think it's frustrating to Apple and to Google, both who'd like to include this transit information.
Absolutely. But this is a phenomenal looking app. It works great. I use it all the time where I am. It supports, like you said, 67, I think, cities.
A lot
right
of
now.
Canadian cities, too.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of American cities. And it's just, it's not only France, a great way Mexico. To get around, but it's a beautiful and great way to get around.
That's nice. Really good. It's thetransitapp.com, and it is an Android version if you're forced to use an HTC One. You can use that. How about Jason Snell? What do you got for us?
I have an app that, full disclosure, was written by a guy I have known since college. It's called Romantomatic. It's an iOS app. It's $2. It's by Greg Noss. Romantomatic is an app. Now, Romantomatic got a lot of press coverage, a lot of really blistering negative press coverage by people who like to judge other people, which is people on the internet.
Yeah.
Here's the great thing about Romantomatic. Romantomatic is not a fake out for people who don't love their partner. Romantomatic is a reminder app that reminds you gently that you might want to send a nice little message
via a
text to your significant other.
It's so easy to forget. Yes.
That you love them. Now, yes. It doesn't send it for you on a timer. It just reminds you that you need to send it. It does provide some suggestions of things you could say. You can set your own messages.
That's a good idea.
You can use one of the pre-stocked messages, which includes, I believe, an I love you in Klingon, in Elvish.
It's right.
And there's some other obscure made-up language that it's got. It's got emojis, and then you can also set up your own. And it'll even tell you how often you've sent various messages so you can vary it. But it is a way, I think at its base, it is a tool for people with iPhones who maybe don't take the time they should for their partner to have their iPhone say, hey, you should stop for a minute and take the time to say something nice to your partner.
Headed into a meeting.
I've been using it since I got it. It's cute.
Yeah. Don't tell your partner that.
Oh, she knows. Okay. I have to sometimes say, this isn't Greg's app. This is me.
But, really, that's the drawback.
Yeah. Yeah,
I actually have a Python script that does that. So,
one of the prefab messages, this is totally an original message. But it's, you know, it's $2, and some people think it is. Some people really get up on their high horse, and they say, oh, well, if you need to be reminded to tell your significant other that you love them, then there's something terribly wrong with you, and I'm judging you. Okay, whatever. I think sometimes we get our heads down and we're working on stuff and time passes. And so that phone just reminding you, hey, take a moment. I think it's nice.
It's easy. It makes it easy to choose a sweetheart, easy to change your sweetheart.
Should you choose to, I suppose. And it's got a very nice set of the presets are really fun.
Can I write my own?
It's got a sense of humor. You can write your own and you can do that. And it's like I said, it's lighthearted. It doesn't take itself too seriously.
I like it.
$2.
Romantomatic by Extra Moon LLC for iOS. Andy Anatko, your pick of the week.
Well, we're talking about Apple making deals with cable companies, so I thought I'd plug two things. My favorite cable channel, Turner Classic Movies, and also the Watch TCM app, which to my eye is exactly how you should do like a mobile viewing app for a cable channel. Because look at everything. It's really well designed for one thing, but look at the features that it gives you. You get the East Coast feed, so you can whatever is actually being broadcast on TCM right now, you can watch it live. So if you're watching it like in your bedroom cable box and then you start walking through the house, whatever scene you left at is going to be where you'll pick off from right here because you're getting the live stream. You get the East Coast feed and the West Coast feed. So if I came in like halfway through a movie, I can catch the rest of it later on in the day. But also, not all, but most or many of the movies that they're currently playing are also available on demand. I was disappointed that I could not see Zardoz on demand, but.
Sean Connery is Zardoz.
Oh, he's my not. God. That was
He's not?
He's not Zardoz. I don't want to spoil Zardoz for you, but he's not Zardoz.
Damn it.
But yeah, but this is exactly how you should do it. And I wish that every single channel did it this way instead of saying, oh, and I'm sorry, but that episode or that movie you wanted to see has not been unlocked yet. You can see the episode from season 2 5 years ago. Solange is interrupted 3 times with commercials that you can't fast forward through. It's no, if you buy there, the philosophy seems to be that if you subscribe to Turner Classic Movies, and you should because it is the most awesome channel on the entire cable dial, it'll say, nope, if you want to watch it, whatever you want, please, thank you for your money. Please continue to give us money for our channel. Here, have a nice, real cool free app.
Thank you. Kevin Marks gave us an earworm on This Week in Google last week that I want to spread now to every other person who hasn't seen that show. It is called 2048. Have you played it? You showed us Threes.
I've seen it, yeah.
This is like Twos with Threes with Twos.
I had to delete Threes. It was ruining my life. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do anything.
This is web-based. You're trying to make same thing. You're matching up numbers. It's subtly different, and I'm not sure how it is. There are a lot of implementations. This was the definitive. If you just Google 2048, you'll find the web implementation.
And what you need to do is play the Doctor Who edition.
There are infinite. You have a Doctor Who Twos?
Yes. Start with the first Doctor, makes the second, and you can go all the way up. It's
what's the URL for that?
It's in the chat. I just put it in the chat room.
Okay, that's awesome.
042s for the Hitchhiker fans?
It's usversusthem.com, 2488, using Doctor Who. So those two match. Can you show that chat just so people get what we're talking about? Those match. Obviously, those don't, but there's one that one matches.
The second doctor makes the third doctor.
Ooh, I don't know how. Oh, okay, here we go, here we go, here we go. Yeah, baby, yeah, baby. Come on, baby. Uh-oh.
Got the guy with the scarf now.
Uh-oh. Got the guy with the scarf, but how am I going to get... Oh, there we go. I got Mo. Now how do I get Shemp? Okay.
Yep.
That's good. That's good. This is fun.
You're destroying whole years of continuity. Oh, there you go. You got Peter Davison now. Look at you.
Look at you. Oh, isn't that cute? Oh, look at that. Oh, this is fun. And I don't even watch Doctor Who. You don't. The point of these games is you don't really need to know what you're doing. You just keep pressing buttons till something happens.
All you need is something better you're supposed to be doing instead of this.
That's exact. All you need is a column, and you're on deadline. And this will seem like the best game you ever played.
Yeah.
What's the white thing? What's? Oh, there we
See,
go.
That loads, it's like drama. It's
suddenly
like, boom.
Color. Okay. Well,
you're
we'll
watching. Leo plays games on the internet.
I see. My only disapproval is that there's only one game I'm interested in called 2048, and it's RoboToron 2048.
That's a different one. Yeah. Yeah. Another good one, though.
For our elders.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes this portion of Leo plays games
on the internet.
On the internet. Coming up, Leo buys a TiVo on the internet. A very special edition. I want to thank everybody for being here, and especially our two in-studio guests. It's so nice to have you in, Renee. We see a lot of you.
I'm trying.
Despite the fact that you're like all the way diagonally over there.
I'm trying. Get some nice weather once in a while.
Love having this. Thank you. Love having you in. Renee Ritchie is at iMore.com, which is really the definitive place to figure out what's going on in the Apple world. Thank you for doing that. Mobile Nations also. Crackberry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Can I get a quick plug-in for a show?
Yeah.
We've been recording Debug lately. We've done an interesting arc. We had the guy on who did the NT port to DEC, and then we had .NET, and then we had Miguel de Icaza for Mono.
Oh, I love.
From that, we went to Syracuse arguing about Mono versus Objective-C.
Wow.
And then we've just recorded, which won't be out for a couple weeks, but Ken Ferry, who did auto layout and passbook at Apple and now has his own app coming out.
You really have good people on. Where can I find Debug?
It's imore.com/debug.
Okay. I went to imore.com/podcast.
Every couple weeks.
You guys have too many shows. imore.com/debug.
Renee has more podcasts than I do. And I have a lot of podcasts.
You too? So. This podcasting thing might take off.
It might.
I have to listen to yours and Leo's and
what
mine.
What do you do, Jason Snell? I know you have The Incomparable, which is fabulous.
That's right.
Like
so
five
there's,
by five.
There's The Incomparable. You can go to theincomparable.com. We have a new spinoff called Total Party Kill, where we play Dungeons & Dragons on the internet for your amusement.
Fascinating.
Incompetently, awesome. I might add.
Even better.
And that seems to be a thing. And then we are doing Clockwise on Tech Hive, which is me and Dan Morin and a couple of guests every week.
Wow, so. You're busy, busy. Boy.
Yeah.
And of course, he's also editorial director at IDG, which apparently requires no oversight whatsoever. Nope. Macworld.com might be
runs
a good
itself.
Spot to go to. It just runs itself.
Like
so you can do podcasts.
Sure.
Good man. I like that. Andy Inako has also a 5x5 podcast, Inako's Almanac, and is a regular here on Mac Break
yes.
Weekly.
Episode 100 coming up in a couple of weeks, so we're Woo. Preparing for that.
Awesome.
If you want to check out my blog, has been rather fallow for a few months as I've been trying to figure out how to create WordPress themes that don't stink. And I decided to throw some money at the problem, so now there's a new theme, and now I'm actually blogging a little more often there, too.
Inotco.com.
Inotco.com, the rite of passage is that you have to know how to spell my last name correctly.
I have no idea how to spell it.
I have no idea.
That's your
and those of you who hated me last year for switching to Android and for the three-parter that I wrote for Tech Hive about the reasons why, there's going to be a follow-up coming in Green Blog very, very soon that will help you renew your hate for me. So, what I'm saying is bring it on. Whatever it is that you've been kicking, it's now shriveled like a fig, so you can't hurt me there anymore. So now I have the strength again to tell you how it's going a year on. And hopefully be doing some more stuff for that later on. I'm coming out of I've been on like a semi-sabbatical for a few months that has now ended, so it's like, now I've got, how many of these 18 things I want to do this week am I going to get to? So,
actually, what's nice is if I think I'm going to start referring people to Inotco.com, Inatko.com, because it's all there. You're writing your podcast, you're speaking.
Yeah, and so I'm fixing it up as I go along. It was really embarrassing. It's just that I'm the guy who wrote his own blogging software in the mid-90s because none existed. And so I kept thinking that it's PHP. I can learn PHP and I can learn CSS. But there are people who are doing nothing but writing great blog software with that stuff. And like, I stink at this. And my heart is in the right place and I'm learning the right stuff, but I'm just not as good at it. And you're telling me that for $40, I can just buy something that good? Okay, here's $40. I'm an old person. I don't have the time, interest, or energy anymore. I just want things done.
I know. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. Live is always good, but if you can't watch live, we've got on, just like TiVo, we've got on-demand audio and video available after the fact. Actually, you can watch us on TiVo, as a matter of fact. All you got to do is go to twit.tv/MBW or subscribe in your favorite podcatcher, including TiVo, if you want to do it that way. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Now back to work or Macworld Expo. Break time is over.